I want to send out a special thanks to the sponsors of today's show, William, Josie the Mountain Troll, and Panther. Thank you so much. We humbly and truly could not do this show without you.
Southern Bramble is a Patreon-supported podcast. If you would like to support the podcast and gain access to early, unedited video footage, listener questions, or be thanked by name, you can find us at patreon.com/southernbramble.
You're listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of crooked ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light.
And I'm Come Let Us Adore Me, Austin, Bane X Bramble on Instagram. And today we have a very special guest with us. Please welcome author, teacher, debonair extraordinaire, the one, the only, Dr. Alexander Cummins. Dr. Cummins, Hello. How are you today? Hi.
I'm really well, thanks. It's lovely to see you both again. And it's nice to be back to talk about one of the many reasons for the season today.
The many reasons for the seasons. And I was thinking about this. I was like, oh shit, I have a lot of stuff to do this month. And I thought I was like ready to slow down. And I was like, no, there's just a lot of magic that I have to do. I have a class to prepare for. I have oils to make. I have tools to do. I'm like, wow, I really need to get cracking. It's been a lovely few days off, but I need to get back into it.
I love this time of year. I also understand that this isn't everyone's like favorite because of the way things are with SAD/seasonal defective disorder. I think that's kind of funny / a little right on the nose.
It's like you knew what you were doing.
You knew what you were doing with this. but it's one of my favorite times. And I think I was just talking with you, Austin. I felt like I was exposed to this like wheel of the year, And these are the high holy holidays. Oh, we just talked about this. That's what it was when we were doing the episode on Ancestral Whispers. And I was talking about the way in which we look at the wheel of the year and how I see my wheel of the year based off of my immediate lived culture and the way in which things, my year turns. And so while winter solstice is really fun and super cute, like Christmas has always been. And when I say Christmas, I actually mean specifically more like the secular act and holiday of that we're coming on, the tree, the stockings, the myth of Santa. There's so much more, the lights, the festivities, the food that's surrounding it, the time leading up to it. My birthday is this month. So like, it's always been like a very specific feeling this time of year. And so I am very, very unfamiliar with a lot of the mysticism of the Magi, the Three Kings. I think that this is really, really fucking cool because it really adds a whole nother layer to the story of this time of year. And I think in a world where the internet can't stop arguing about whether or not Christmas was stolen from pagans, we need to kind of step back and stop acting like that matters. Like, we need to actually start focusing on what myth would you like to celebrate this time of year? Because let Susie celebrate her myth, let Mikey celebrate his myth, and let me celebrate my myth. None of these myths have to be congruent as long as they're not hurting each other. We can like really celebrate and enjoy this and lift it up without having to tear each other down to celebrate. So I think this is really exciting and really cool.
Oh, that was beautifully put, Marshall. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
I quite agree. I think one of the things about the Magi is that even if you haven't had like a deeply invested like folk Catholic upbringing with like, you know, hordes of grandmas whispering all their like, you know, weird graveyard secrets to you, you've probably, if you know, growing up in the UK at least, you've probably sat through a bunch of kids wearing tea towels on their heads, you know, stumbling through a nativity scene, right? And to realize that that itself is a very, very old tradition of kids dressing up as the Magi and going around wassailing or doing the Star Boys stories and things that we might get into talking about later. That, like, same as looking at the history of charms and finding that actually things that kids say in playgrounds today, like, you know, rain, rain, go away is an incredibly old charm, right? Like,
ring around the rosy.
Yeah. And the things that in the age of disenchantment have been kind of brushed off the table are still like picked up by kids and the way that we parent and the way that we understand the turn of the year. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that idea of returning to what's real about ritual lived in our own like lives and experiences rather than pretending we are like some 13th century peasants or something, or kings, God worse, is really important, right? Like, yeah, a lived experience of where you're actually coming from. Yeah, totally. No, I quite agree.
Ask me about the complications of celebrating a king's holiday and being deeply anti-monarchist, but at a later time.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right. I think that this is also one of my favorite times of the year. I mean, I'm somebody who like SADS doesn't affect me as much during the darker months of the year, mainly because I look forward to it, because I can't do the heat. It's just
sweater weather.
I know, right? It's finally cold, especially, you know, being in Florida. It's like, even today it's like 80 something and I'm like, it's too hot. I love going around, skulking around when it's like dark at 4 o'clock. I know that can be a lot for people, and after a while it weighs on me too. But my favorite thing about this time is especially like what you were saying, Marshall, the lights. Like, I love seeing people's lights. I love the, and we'll get into this more, is this like idea that the lights are the light in the dark to shatter the darkness, to fracture the encroaching death of winter, or the maybe not even death contemporarily, although for some people that's still a reality, but like the despair that also brings to a reminder that like there is still hope and all the emotional stars of Bethlehem, the little stars of Bethlehem that get us through the winter. I'm really excited to talk about with you.
I decorated my apartment with, like, you can kind of see them now. I have like these hanging lights here over by my back door. I have like a string of lights that go around the curtain. It's year round. It's not like it's just a simple thing that I do just for the holidays, but I did that because I like the idea of twinkling lights in my home. I feel like I decorated my home like a weird mixture of Howl's Moving Castle and the inside of a modern but cozy cottage. And I felt like I wanted twinkling lights. I wanted warmth. I wanted to feel like I wanted to be snuggly in here all the time. And that's one of the things that I feel like the lights really bring out to me. Like, I want to wrap up. I want to do festive things with my friends. Last night we went to a big like arboretum where I have a big garden. They had lots of beautiful lights. We took pictures. They did the 12 days of Christmas that we kind of ignored when we went to go get drinks at the bar. And it was really, really fun just to kind of like go out with my friends and do these holiday themed events. I never really connected the way that these feelings come up to me with some of the stories that I grew up with. And as I was kind of like, I got your book, The Book of the Magi. I thought it was really, really cool. There were so many different parts of it that I feel like connected to these kind of fuzzy feelings that I feel, these kind of nostalgic experiences that I had growing up. I know when I was younger, my mom would force me to go. I didn't have to go to church all the time, but I had to go for Christmas Eve with my Nana at 4 o'clock. And we had to watch the same, you know, kids coming in from Sunday school as they read the play and everything. And I have to admit, it was one of those times, especially as an adult, looking back on it, where I wasn't going to a church service. I was going to a presentation about a story, and a story that affected the way that we look at this time of year. And as someone who loves story, who finds power in story, the way I am now reframing my thoughts around the three kings, around the Magi, around the gold, the frankincense and myrrh, around the offerings, around the way in which I'm not going to say it's so witchy because we already have a whole argument about the definition of witch. It's so fucking magical. Like, it is very magical. It's very folksy. It's a story that carries a spirit within it of hope, of newness, of change. So I thought it was really, really cool. And it's started to kind of shape a little bit more the way that I see the magic of this holiday. It's not just the darkest day of the year on the winter solstice, the 21st. It's not just Christmas with trees and Santa and really delicious Southern casseroles. There's magic here. And
I really, yeah, I think you're very much onto something. And firstly, no one's happy with the Jesus was a witch girlies. No, the girls who get it on the witch side don't want her. The girls who get it on the Christian side don't want her. Like, no, bestie, Jesus mm-hmm. Christ wasn't a witch. Right, there's so much to unpack there. I did see that, by the way, and I was like, oh Lord, here they are. But that is kind of, so this is why I have such a hard time with mm-hmm. the loosey-goosey-ness mm-hmm. of witchcraft. And it's only in the Western evangelicized mm-hmm. secular world that we have this problem.
Yeah.
Because when you go to other places in the world that I hate to break it to Americans do exist.
What? Like
there are places in the world that are not secularized in the same way we are.
Mm.
That magic does actually carry a weight, and there is a belief, not even just a belief, but like a cultural recognition that mm-hmm. this exists. And they're not combative with science at all. When you go to those places in the world, when you say the word witch, like there is a connotation to that. In some villages in Europe, like if you use the wrong word to define yourself, like mm-hmm. people will not associate with you at best. And at worst, you might end up getting yourself like in a predicament where maybe some people might want to harm you.
Yeah.
And then people will in the West will be like, oh my God, well, that's awful. And it's like, no, that's just the reality of the word. And that's why you have a lot of people in other places aside from the West,
mm-hmm.
the secularized West, I should say, that are very cautious around using that term.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you de-emphasize the point of the term, and when you can give it a no meaning,
mm-hmm.
Meaning that everybody has a definition, what you've done now is you've displaced the word into taking on a personal connotation. Mm-hmm. And then when those clash with other people's, they don't equate. And so therefore, we're in the predicament where we are in now, where people start calling Jesus Christ a witch,
mm-hmm.
where people start calling, yes, you're absolutely right, plenty of hoodoo practitioners may use that term, and that's totally fine. But I also know people who do practice hoodoo who would also swear up and down that they don't do witchcraft,
mm-hmm.
Or don't even identify with the term witch because of XYZ factors.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, look at Mexico. You have to understand, witch is a European and specifically like English word. And the way in which that word translates in so many other languages, again, it carries a different connotation. So if you were to say brujo or bruja, And in Mexico, it carries a much more sinister and feared connotation behind it, which is different from, say, like hechicería or curanderismo. Like, they have different words and different languages around the world for the one that in English we have now tried to make a catch-all. And so when we try to apply that in different cultures, we are sometimes met with a kind of backlash that is unexpected by a lot of practitioners who aren't prepared for that. And I feel like, I totally see what you're saying. And I feel like, honestly, this is just my opinion, I feel like Wicca, as it made its way in the Western world across, it tried to redefine the word witch in a way that softened it. It took all the punch out of it. It took all the fire out of it. It gave it a nice and fluffy, I hate to say fluffy bunny, but like it gave it a fluffy, earthy, privileged woman in a garden with her sage stick. You know, it gave it pastel colors that historically witch and witchcraft did not have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, like you said, it's by design, and that mostly comes out of maybe not even Wicca, but like a much earlier conception of like publication companies and things like that that are trying to, it's very hard to sell books that are very tough for people to read. And that's not even like in the language that's being, I don't mean that in terms of like the reading level is advanced. I mean, like a lot of people, the mass public does not want to read a book about how to conjure the devil and exchange your soul to become a monster. Like people don't, and people don't want to wrap their head around that. And that's fine.
But we'll watch it in Salem.
But we'll watch it in Salem, the show. Yeah, absolutely. And so for the defining factors of which we can think of it, there's a level of inhumanity to it. And this is why we have cryptid witches. Like this is kind of in many cultures, but also even before the concept of witch as personhood or witch as human, this idea that witches are actually monsters or spirit monsters that bring disease. They're more akin to demons or bad fairies or monsters in general, right? And then we also have the idea that witchcraft is action. Witchcraft is something that you do that inflicts malefica, and it is also trafficking with the unclean. And so this idea that and that's where things get very culturally specific. So we have these really broad terms, and that's the point, is to be broad, but also have a demarcating factor of like this, this, and this equates to witchcraft. So the trafficking with the unclean, but what is unclean? That's culturally dependent.
Do you think that witchcraft can still be defined as witchcraft if they're not doing a magical act that is based in malefica, but maybe based in benefic ends? Is it still witchcraft in your mind?
It's complicated because at that point, we have to say, so there's kind of this idea in many traditions where like you can be many-headed or you can do many different things. The idea of healing somebody, you might seek, this is an easy and perhaps poor example, you can go seek the quote-unquote white witch to go alleviate a sickness.
Alabaster
even, gypsum. And yet, at the same time, even those that were accused of white witchcraft, which wasn't like a really popular thing, but those who had donned on that the title of white witch or had been accused of that, still have a level of like, but where are you getting that power from? So
it's almost more like the power source is included in the concept.
It is. And so this is where the trafficking with the unclean comes in. Now, we could also go the other direction and say that witchcraft is something that is done at certain points, or being a witch is done when you are utilizing the inhuman and to traffic with these unclean spirits and blah, blah, blah. But it is ultimately harmful. I don't necessarily think that can you be a witch and do healing work? Absolutely. We know that this is the case because there are people who tack on this term to themselves or have this term applied to them and who do really vile things, but they also do really wonderful things as well.
Right. That's the crooked path we weave.
That's right. The oh, to be a spider. I think you're a moth. That is that. So yeah, it's complicated and it is nuanced and it is culturally specific, but it has demarcating factors of inhumanity, malefica, trafficking with the unclean, quote unquote. What does that mean? Also, what does malefica mean? That's again where it gets culturally specific. What is bad? What is objective? I mean that in the I object, not the object. Then the other layer is the which kind of ties into the anti-human or the monstrosity part of it is the transvection or the transinduction, the other world, journeying to the other world.
Mm-hmm.
And yet all these things can be applied to on their, if we separate them or we isolate these things, we can apply them to other aspects or other traditions.
Yeah.
The shaman journeys to other worlds, but maybe isn't necessarily a witch.
Mm-hmm.
The sorcerer may traffic with unclean spirits, but that doesn't mean that is this person is unhuman or inhuman, or part human. You know, so all these things kind of have to merge together to become one.
Mm-hmm.
As this like multifaceted effect of like what witchcraft is, and we, yeah, so it can be very complicated. Certainly
one of the things that kind of came to my attention a while ago, and I don't know why I said this earlier, because, but I think what you just said reminded me of it. One of the things was understanding that ultimately witchcraft is a transgressive act. And I feel like that as a statement kind of covers a huge portion of it for me. First off, what would be considered a transgression changed from century to century, you know,
and from place to place
and from place to place. But sometimes people would even, not sometimes, but like manipulating the natural world for your own magical means to some people would have been considered an absolutely transgressive act. To others, it was literally a religious and social superstition. Literally, like, I don't know. A lot of the superstitions that have now become part of everyday life at one point was more of a small village or cultural act. And some people have even gotten so far into it, building it into a part of a folk practice in modern day. But a lot of those people wouldn't identify as witches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So this actually just, I think this is a great transition into discussing paganism here, because this is an interesting thing. I recently saw how Frankie, Chaotic Witch Aunt, recently talked about the fact that they are no longer identifying as pagan. They don't feel close to that term. They don't feel identifying with that term. They like the idea of dual faith, the concept or personal identifier being dual faith, because it actually does involve a mixture of saints, religious figures, but also, and it's, I think it's okay, we discussed this a little bit, there is a little paganism in there, but it's not just that. And I think that's the thing when you are working with, say, like saints and maybe some Roman deities as well. Like we talked with Kitchen Toad about what it is to be dual faith and what that means and what that looks like and how gray of an area it is. And sometimes a singular side of that identity or label doesn't really do it justice. So like, I like that we're having these conversations now about what is a witch, what is a pagan. I recently did a poll on Threads, and this is very interesting. I asked very specifically, do you identify as pagan? Feel free to share in the comments why and what paganism means to you. Out of 246 votes, 70% said yes and 30% said no. What was interesting is the majority of the comments were people who said no. A lot of them were about people who said no. They don't identify as pagan anymore because they found better terminology that for them, that they feel was not available at the time in which they came into the practice. So like, again, I grew up in the 90s, pagan and Wicca and witch were almost, again, synonymous same, with each yeah. other. They were all considered the same thing. That it obviously has evolved. But for me, and this is my actual response to this concept or question, I do identify as a pagan, not because I think that pagan, because pagan is, does not mean someone who worships many gods. That's not what it means. There were some people who thought that that's the definition of it. That's just a polytheist. That's just someone who works with, venerates or worships multiple gods, more than one god, and more than two, because that'd be duotheism versus monotheism. So it was just one of those things where pagan as a term originally was just kind of an insult to the people that lived in the countryside who still followed their old faiths as Christianity was sort of taking over from Rome and spreading throughout Europe. So we know what this term meant back then. It doesn't carry that same weight now. And I think people have found that there is new language they identify with more, like animism. Someone said, like, I don't identify as a pagan because I found the terminology of animism and that felt much more at home for me. So they identify instead as animist. Now, I'm an animist too, but I also really actually like and want to kind of reclaim the original concept and definition. I am the slur that did not agree to be converted. I am the person who was presented with Christianity or other, and I picked other. So for me personally, I like pagan. Pagan for me was my battle cry against what was being forced and shoved down my throat. It was my choice to pick. So while the society has kind of recognized that other verbiage and language has evolved or become available, I personally still pick pagan because it is a representation, especially as a folkloric and quote unquote traditional witch. It's a reaction to Christianity. So I see that word as my choice in reaction.
I think that for me, I didn't like jive. I grew up in the kind of same world that you did, Marshall, like my exposure to paganism, witchcraft. And also too, I think is a good point to bring up this idea, because we keep saying pagan. And I think what so many people mean when they mean pagan is neo-paganism, which is actually a lot more tacked down and defined as like a earth-based quote-unquote religion, yada yada yada, and what does that mean? Ask a pagan. I guess you'll get 20,000 different answers. But
yeah, pagan isn't a single religion. It's literally it's somewhat of an umbrella term.
Pagan is, like you said, used as a slur, and it is used also anthropologically as a term to describe a small religion or a small thing that is not part of a larger overcultural religion. And that gets tricky because, like, then it's very culturally dependent, just like the word witch is. But it still has a defining factor, right? It's small and it is not large. And it's not a lot of people practice it. So I think that pagan can certainly be an identifying term for so many people. It didn't jive with me after a certain point. This is when I was doing Hellenismos, and then, like, in Hellenismos, like, witchcraft is not, again, something that somebody should be doing. It's not pious. It's dirty. And I mean that literally as in, like, it surrounds yourself with miasma, because witchcraft itself is a miasmic practice, meaning pollution, because you're trudging about in graveyards and yada yada yada. So you shouldn't practice miasma or miasmic practices. That's kind of the thing. It's not the same as sin, but anyways, witchcraft is also not pious, because you don't trust the gods to do what they're going to do for you. So when I started getting into Hellenism, also, I was like, actually, just kidding, this, like, is not right for me. I don't know why I would ever come to this. Like many people, I was exposed to a lot of Greek myth as a kid and classicism. But that being said, that's kind of when I stopped being like, I actually am not pagan. And I also grew up very Christian and in a high Protestant church. I grew up Lutheran, so we believe in saints, but it's more complicated than just like, oh, I venerate saint, you know, so and so. And so why don't I just, like, I already have a framework to exist in, adopting frameworks that, like, don't make sense to me or are alien to me in a way, why would I adopt that if I'm not learning these values from people traditionally, or like I'm immersing myself culturally? That's why I never quite understood saying I'm Catholic or a folk Catholic when other people would say that I'm folk Catholic, right? When I'm not Catholic, because Catholicism is a culture. So That being said, the term paganism doesn't jive with me. Religious terms really don't, I don't think, jive with me. If I had to check a box, I would probably say I'm Christian.
Ew.
Right. And if I had to check a box, I'd probably, like, if the box was a good or a good list, I guess I would say maybe like I'm a Christian diabolist. That doesn't make any sense, right? And yet at the same time, if we really wanted to just sound posh and turn our nose up at everything, I guess I would just say I'm an ovnist. I do believe in the reality of all deities. Yeah.
It's
And not as
interesting.
like
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, just and not like as a flippant, like, oh, I believe it's an expression of every divine being. Like, no, I believe in the complexity of deities and their own personhood within every spirit that we encounter. That just doesn't necessarily mean that I have to venerate, worship, or interact or engage or have the capacity to engage with all these different things. So I have a framework. Yeah. What were you saying?
I was gonna say, like, I would never check the Christian box on site. Like, if I had to check a box, I would literally skip it if those are the only options. Or like, if paganism was an option, I'd pick that one. Obviously, that's an umbrella term, but like, there's something about, and I think that's one of the reasons why I actually feel very comfortable with the way that I came on to what paganism is, because of my, I hesitate to say, severe aversion to Christianity, because that has evolved over the years, especially when it comes to the cultural implications of the history of magic within Christianity, within lots of different religions and concepts. Like you said, it's a culture that has added to this. But I think that's really, I never would have considered or thought of you as picking like the Christian box on a what is this, a doctor's form?
I was thinking like a test, like
Like
one of those tests that you would get in high school or something with a
sure.
little Scantron bubble
Yes.
things. Yeah.
Very census taking.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Census. There we go. But like
Yes.
with a gun to your head.
Right, right.
A Roman census, if you will.
Yes, if you will. So I'm curious. Okay, so here's a new one. What are some of your earliest influences in your craft? And what are your most current influences? Are they same? Are they different? Are they drastically changed?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
For me, it's weird because, again, like I had this, like I was deeply involved in the church that I grew up in, and very like I studied a lot. I went to, blah, 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 Bible weekly, whatever, things like that, classes and yada, yada, yada. And then it never like jived with me. I was always very challenging in those classes in terms of like because I had a cosmological framework that was, or like I was thinking not within the context of Christianity, I was thinking about in the context of an omnist. And so also like knowing that like a Buddhist exists and they have power. So like what, how does this conflate? Anyways,
It's
that being
demonic.
said, right, exactly. Luckily I didn't grow up in that kind of church. But that being said, so my exposure to magic obviously like was through a Scott Cunningham book. And I think I've talked about that before. OG, the complete book of incense, oils, and brews. And actually, I think the first version that I read was not the complete one. It was like the first publication. And I remember the drawings in there, the Scott Cunningham, it wasn't his drawings, but like the line work of like all these goddesses in smoke, or these women in smoke with these like voluptuous breasts and
Very
gorgeous,
breasticles.
very Farrah Fawcett hair.
The
And I was,
layers.
the layers, I was just completely entranced. And that was kind of where like my first like tangible, and also the internet too. But my first like tangible like book on somewhat ritual magic, kind of, not really. And yet that was it for a long time, and then it got very, very pagan, very Hellenistic, very, all of that, but like also like not, because I wasn't doing a very good job at being pagan. Again, not very religious. And so, or I am, but in a different way. And now it's kind of now it really is like, no, I do have this. Granted, it's oppositional, it's certainly heretical, but like I do have like a very Christian worldview, a very a very Christianized worldview, and other things that I'm learning about are constantly influencing what I do, and yet at the same time have an alignment. So like it doesn't feel super foreign to me. What about you?
Well, Wicca was a huge influence in my earliest practice. And it's funny you mentioned that about like the Hellenism and paganism. Like when I was a young teenager, and this was really, really prevalent, like pagan exposure was very much like deity Pokemon. You kind of picked one to do your magic with, and building relationships wasn't really accent. Building relationships with your deities before, quote unquote, using them for magic was not something that was very, very dominant in the culture in the time. It was very much like, hey, you need a love spell, call Aphrodite. Hey, you need a spell for I don't know, a job interview, you call upon Hermes. Hey, you need a spell for being strong in a competition at your soccer game this weekend. Call upon Thor, like or Ares.
Yeah,
Like
it
it was
wasn't like
very
that.
much like
Dial ho.
Pokemon dial. It was very much like dial a
My
deity.
role, yeah, my Rolodex of Pokeballs,
Exactly.
of
That
gods.
was very, very common. That was just what was kind of being taught at the time, especially with solitary Wicca really taking on a big boom for that decade in the night in the like late 80s and 90s. It was very much here's the backbone, but do with it what you will. It's about your comfort. And I feel like a lot of my practice over the years has changed into not being about my comfort, but instead challenging a lot of those comfort places that I thought were so concrete, and finding out they're actually a lot more fluid than I anticipated. Getting into the queerness of my craft has really, really changed. Seeing things less binary, seeing things as very, very fluid. There was a period of time where like a huge portion of my work was pretty much all goddess oriented. Very goddess, Gaia, Earth, universe, she who
Same
is,
bestie.
yes,
She
oh
who
yes, she who
is
is,
great goddess.
yes. I know
Yeah.
it was very much like that. And
I do love a green goddess salad dressing.
you know what, I have yet to enjoy a good one. I'm a honey mustard kind of guy. No, but like that has really, really shifted. My introduction to traditional and folkloric witchcraft drastically changed the way that I think about spirit relationships. Animism was not, animism and Wicca were not two things that you saw in the same book with each other, at least when I was younger. Now everything is about animism for me. Everything is about recognizing the spirit in my favorite cup, in my computer, in the light that I have, in my home, in my car. My relationship with that has really, really evolved a lot. Also, my relationship with like monthly commitments, you know, contracts that I've made, my relationship with familiar spirits, specifically like the court that I have built with the concept of the snake, the hare, the toad, and the crow, of the witch king and queen, of what that cosmology actually looks like is something that I've been building over the last few years. And I finally touched on my own personal perception of that in the preface of my book, about the old ones, the concept of absence, existence, desire, and physicality. And I'm really excited because in my next book, I'm going to dive into that a lot more and kind of expand upon what that spiritual court looks like. Because for me, it's been developing through experience and through my understanding of the spiritual world that I exist in. And that's something that I feel like is always evolving and developing for many of us. And I think one of the things that I like talking about what are our earliest influences versus what are now. Paganism, witchcraft. What we do is a lived experience. It's a living concept. I don't want to say living dogma because it's not about dogma. It's a living and ever-flowing and changing spirituality and relationship. A lot of people, I think they want to find the bones, the foundation. They're like, ah, I got it. This is good. This is how I want to stay. And it never evolves and changes. I'm not here to tell you that you have to do that, but you are going to grow throughout your whole life. Your experience is going to change. The facts of your life and what make up who you are and what's important to you are going to evolve and change. Your spirituality should evolve with that, in my opinion. And I like talking about what we talked about, say, 3.5 years ago versus now, because I've seen so much change and grow between both of our practices and ideas and concepts. And I want our listeners to recognize not only is that okay, it is deeply encouraged. I think if you want something that is unchangeable, pick something with dogma and then argue with a bunch of people on the internet about it. But but I don't want to do that. And
that's the best advice we could ever give you is yeah. Actually just pick fights on the internet, because your opinion is going to change somebody. Your opinion will, I promise you, at your 1,000,000th argument, somebody's going to believe you and somebody's going to change their mind about what you posted on Facebook or on Threads or Twitter.
Yeah. If I had not gotten into argument with someone years ago about there being no devil in the craft, I never would have been exposed to different aspects of, say, traditional witchcraft. I would have been exposed to the folkloric devil. I never would have been exposed to different authors that are sharing different perspectives, because I only had the one collective of perspective. I'm not going to say get on there and start shitposting. Shitposting is fine. Shitposting is fine. Oh, I know. I just think, but I will say that, like, we learn from each other as a community. Like, yeah. We learn from each other's differences of opinions all the time. They challenge us. I think that's actually, most people don't want to admit they like being challenged, because that means that their worldview either has to expand or they have to fight. And sometimes people have a proclivity one way or the other. But I think we should always be challenging our views, because they're either going to reaffirm them or you're going to learn something you didn't fucking know yesterday.
Mm-hmm. That was a really great way to put that, Marshall.
Thank you. What does a ritual look like for you now? And is it different from how it may have looked, say, like 3, 4, 5, or 37 years ago?
Well, I'm not that old.
I feel attacked right now. I feel like I am being attacked by my own biznatch partner.
I will say, that's fine. You're wiser than me.
My beard shows it, that's for sure.
I think it would depend on what the context of the ritual is. But yeah, mm-hmm. I would say things absolutely look different now. In some ways, things look more complicated, and in mm-hmm. some ways, things look a lot less complicated.
How so?
It depends on what I'm doing. So a lot of times, like if I'm, sometimes it's literally just sitting there
yeah.
and listening for communion.
Mm.
Sometimes it is, you know, pulling out the three candles that I use for my conjuring triangle. Sometimes it is just singing a song and lighting a candle. Sometimes it is doing a very elaborate spell with all these like parts and pieces. A lot of it is more about a lot of it has a lot more to do with the spirit relationships that I have now than it did when I was younger.
Yeah.
My hair doing. I look like I have like one of those like round graduated haircuts. Anyways.
A bachelor's.
But yeah, graduated. What about you? Thank you.
Oh, no, totally. My rituals look very, very different. For one, I am not calling upon the, oh, great, powerful goddess to come down from the universe.
Goddess!
A lot of my ritual has trance work is something that I never did when I was younger. So that's changed a lot. That's been a really cool thing. The introduction of beads, which was I was introduced to in Jason Miller's Hecate class, has really opened up a new level of a type of spellcraft and trance ritual that involves, it's actually quite simple. And I've talked about this before, and I even have a section on my book where I build these beads and I work them as chanting beads, and I will use them by creating either a mantra or a four-line rhyming chant and calling upon, especially if it's a specific familiar, like if I need something that's about healing or travel or financial gain, I might call upon the Southern Hare, who represents the land, the fertility of the land, the plants and medicine that the land give us. I might call upon that specific familiar while a candle's burning to heal my friend with their picture under it. And I'm making it clear that the whole purpose that I'm doing this is I'm calling the familiar hare to go and send it to my friend who I am burning this candle for, and the candle being the beacon of light. A lot of it is very, oh, what's it called? What's that word? Sympathetic. Like sympathetic magic has become a huge part of my ritual. But it's kind of funny because to this day, I still kind of get into some of the folk spells where it's very, very simple. Very simple. You got a fire going. Into the fire, I just posted this yesterday, say like into the fire, you throw, if you want to catch a thief. There was a spell I posted on TikTok yesterday, which I thought was kind of cool to share. And it's one that I have in my book called To Catch a Thief. And it's literally you throw calendula or marigold flowers into a fire and speak the cunning words. A thief be caught, a thief be known, be found who dare to steal from me. Their name be learned, their face be shown, nevermore a burglar shall they be. And when I wrote this, there was something about it that I love a good four-line rhyming phrase. I think that that's one of those things that you can say on repeat, and it really gets you into this in-between mental alpha delta zone, if that makes sense. To where I am pushing my will, and I'm using these tools, and I'm using this directive in a very simple magical ritual. And I think that goes back to being very inspired by a lot of cunning practices of England, where literally it was a singular prayer or chant while holding your hand over a wound, or taking a bag and putting a few sacred items in there and then whispering directly into it what its desire was, and then closing it tightly. And then that's the talisman or magical item you would give to your client. A lot of these folk practices were extremely simple, and they weren't huge rituals. Rituals absolutely exist, especially when it comes to more spiritual spellcraft. I honestly think sometimes there's like several different types of spellcraft when it comes to the magic that I work. There's like the simple charms and enchantments. And then there's, I am communing with spirits to give them a very specific directive and to send them off and do a specific work. And they both involve different levels of engagement. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's the difference between like the idea too here is like we utilize communion or rituals which involve calling upon spirits to draw them down to either direct them to do something or to give us more information so that we can do something, and that might be in the way of like do XYZ for me, or it can be in the idea of formulary, making potions or oils or powders or such and such. So yeah, no, that makes sense.
And
Absolutely.
it's funny, I was thinking like, well, how does it look different from my old spellcraft? And I'm like, well, because my old spellcraft literally started every single time with casting a circle and let's call the elements, calling in north, the power of such and such element. I'm calling in the east, power of such and such element. I'm calling in the south, the power of such and such element. And it's
And
always west water.
yeah, water is always west. But I don't not to I can't even knock it. I will say it's a good ritual framework. It
Oh,
works.
yeah. I would
Like,
never knock it. I'm just saying that's not what I do anymore.
it isn't what I do anymore, but I will say it certainly works.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because like I tried to get so hard away from like really simplistic elemental things for a while, and then it was like I can't. It just doesn't fit up in the divinations that I do. It doesn't, like, there's no point in trying to like humoral theory and therefore also like elemental stuff. It is just so heavily embedded in Western magic, and honestly, like, not even Western magic. Like, it's components or building blocks of like elemental frameworks, even if it's not simply four. They're embedded in so many different magical systems. It's hard to remove yourself from them.
Yes, I agree. Even when I'm calling upon the familiars, even the familiars come from those directions and carry with them elemental virtues.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. I wanted to know, do the deities and spirits you work with, like, what does that look like for you? How
Well,
are
she
they
has golden
envisaged?
hair. And
She's your best friend. We
she's
just
my
had lunch.
bestie. We just had lunch. We're going for coffee later. She wears a gossamer gown. No, I'm just kidding. It's interesting. I've actually had this discussion with myself because I say a lot of times, like, I don't work with deities, I work with spirits. I'm gonna say something that either you and people may not agree with me on as much. Maybe it's a little blasphemous. And you know, we love a bit of blasphemy. I do not really delineate much of a difference between spirits and deities.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
I
And now
yeah.
I understand that this may be controversial for some people, but I actually just don't take it that fucking seriously. Like, I think that working with a great spirit or working with spirits or working with this god or goddess, this is just me personally. I do think absolutely there is, say, like a verbiage difference, maybe a linguistic difference, especially when we're talking about different cultures and how the cultures regard these gods and goddesses. But when it comes to my practice, like my practice, I think it is very easy for me to interchange, say, like the Witch Father, the Devil, the Horned One, the Man in Black, the Horned God. It's very easy for me to have those names interchangeable and not feel any specific affinity or attachment one way or the other. The witch queen, the witch goddess. Like, again, I have no problem with those words being used interchangeably. I understand that won't be everyone's take. And I don't apply this in a worldly view as much as, like I said, in my practice, because I'm not working with Athena. I'm not working with Zeus. I'm not working with Thor. I'm not working with Loki. So I'm not trying to say that, oh, there's no difference between the spirit of this Rosemary and your Loki. I'm saying that because that's not what I'm working with, I'm okay with that interchangeable verbiage because I see them all as gods, spirits, ethereal beings that exist outside of this immediate plane that I can touch. And I can touch them again, if you want to get into my cosmology, I can touch them through the element of physicality. And that physicality is inspired by desire, and that desire is inspired by existence, and that existence comes through from absence. So again, that gets into some of my
Cosmetology degree.
cosmology degree. And you'll see more in my next book when I discuss a little bit more. Like, I do see very much the witch queen as that emanation of desire. I do see very much the man in black, witch father, or folkloric devil, as the emanation of physicality. And each one of them carries with it what came before. So it's this weird mixture of witch king and witch queen, but also everything that goes into making up what those spirits are to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Excellent. What about you?
I definitely didn't think you sounded like flippant. Like, I got what you meant when you said, like, I don't see them
Thank you.
as these, like, it's really interesting because I think, I mean, when you interact, deities are very, gods are very powerful in ways, and it's complicated and it's really dependent on the framework of the religion you're working with. But for
Absolutely.
me personally, like I agree with you in a way. Like I see deities as or I should say gods as spirits that have a large following. I think that there is a maybe not like a quantum of something like something that you can measure for power, but I think there is maybe it's in the people, I don't know. But I think that like there is a level of like exaltation that gets kind of applied, but also at the same time like that is through elevation. And so I agree with you, like there the difference between gods and spirits is there one certainly, but like I don't necessarily I'm also not like a I'm not beholden to one religion, so it's even the things that I do in my witchcraft practices and things like that are very spirit oriented. And sometimes calling upon gods to kind of like have my back, but like that's usually hierarchies. Anyways, what's the question? What does that look like?
Do you work with deities, spirits, or elemental forces?
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
There we go. Next
There we
one.
go. Next one. Next one. Okay, so this is interesting. How has the occult changed your life? How has being a magical practitioner changed your life?
If I wasn't doing, if like, if I didn't make the pacts that I did, I tell people this maybe in a more personal setting, but because it sounds so dramatic, but I also like don't
We
care
love
how
a dramatic
dramatic
queen.
it, yeah, and I don't actually care how dramatic it is because I know where my life would have gone. I would have died. I probably would be dead.
She'll do
So
anything for attention.
she'll do anything for attention. Yeah, I don't. I stand in that honesty of like my life would have been twisted into either witchcraft or not, and that not the other is who knows what. I know what. So yeah, I wouldn't be here. If it weren't for the pacts that I've made and the spirits I am now beholden to doing their bidding. But yeah, what about you?
Let's see. Honestly, the occult changed my life spiritually in the first place. I really struggled with Christianity, the church, my internal struggle between what was being presented to me as my salvation and the thing inside of me that said, I'm not any of those things. What's wrong with you? Witchcraft, and specifically at the time, Wicca was the first thing that I discovered that made me think maybe there isn't anything wrong with me. Maybe the source of what's telling me I'm wrong is the one that's wrong, and I need to look at other sources. So for me, I think it saved my life in somewhat of a different way. It made me start to realize that, you know what, maybe I am just fine the way that I am, and I don't need to change who I am for someone else's perception to be okay of me. And that was, I would say, is my first exposure. But over time, it's actually given me a sense of, and I think this is a kind of an obvious one, but it's one that people don't really always like to say. It gives me a sense of personal power that I feel I didn't have before. And it makes me feel more like, I'm not going to sit here and say like I feel like I'm in control, because I think that's just the control freak in me who just enjoys, as we discussed before, I'm not rigid, but I like everything going my way all the time. Otherwise, I die. And I don't like last minute changes of plans. No, I find that honestly, my craft has helped me hone a creative part of myself that I think I would have let fester and possibly die out if I didn't have the exposure and just deep love and affinity for the craft that I built over the years. My experience as recognizing the world of spirits around me all the time, my animism has made me have a very different relationship with my home, with the land that I live on, with the trees at my crossroads, with my dogs, with my bed, with my apart, like with my car. Like it has changed the way that I view the world. And I think this seems obvious, but I want the vibrancy and severity of this to come through. I don't think my life would be as magical if I didn't.
Yeah. I think that what magic, and not just magic, I think human, it's a greater philosophical conversation, but like
Yeah.
it, and it is one that we've been having for a long time, but like what is the purpose
Hundreds of years.
of or perhaps since time immemorial, what is the purpose of life? And obviously that's going to be again culturally dependent, and also individualistically dependent, I think. But I think that we are magic allows license, and I don't mean witchcraft, I mean magic holistically allows license to impart in, or the act of creation, that we are always creating ourselves and the world around us. I saw this like meme, I think it was like earlier this year, that was like the question of why did God not make wine if we were not meant to have it. And it was like a kind of riffing off of like trans, the trans body, like trans people. And it was like, so in the way that we can impart the act of creation by turning grapes into wine. And in the same similar way, like our bodies are meant to be adorned and created in the way that we are, that we wish to make them, as opposed to everything coming out so perfectly. What is the point of humanity? What is the point of not even just humanity, but like an environment if it is perfected?
And choice of
Because
expression.
right, exactly, we are always in creation. There is it's not about perfection, it's about the ability to create. And
I know, I totally agree. It's interesting because, like, I remember when I was talking to Dev Forst about art being magic. Like, their art is their witchcraft. When I wrote my book, a huge portion of my book's witchcraft is literally the stories that I'm weaving and creating. It's a cosmology building. I'm world building with my own craft, my own cosmology that is shaping and building my perspective and worldview. The thing that I get to create is magic f just for fucking existing. And that's something that didn't exist a year ago. And I think a lot of times, I'm not saying that that is witchcraft, but it's part of my craft. And I like that you mentioned witchcraft carry or and what has changed in your life based off of the occult and practicing magic, because I do think that creation is one of those things that many of us put in a box and we think of it as something that is simple to and clear and obvious, like, oh, it's a painting, oh, it's a new baby, you know, oh, it's a pie. Like, I think what we create, especially when it's not always obvious to everyone else, we create new versions of ourself with every experience we have. Sometimes we're not even getting talking and create the ugly thing. Like, creating things that are ugly is just as important as creating things that are beautiful. And I think that there is something about seeing the beauty in that ugliness that I think is especially like important when it comes to witchcraft for me. I think that's why we sometimes focus on things that are horrific, that are transgressive. This is why we think of like graveyards and black fingers and that horrible cryptid in the woods, because there is something about witchcraft, and I think at least my experience in it, that has helped me celebrate that ugliness. That I think before I was exposed to this, I would have want to put that away somewhere else, because I don't want that in my life. And now I like it there a little bit. I like it there a lot.
Well, to quote Rosamund Pike's character from Saltburn, I have a complete abhorrence to ugliness.
Yeah.
And I do, and anybody who knows me will say that is absolutely true. What advice would you give new practitioners just discovering their craft now that we kind of have like some retrospective behind us? And it feels like we're like looking back on something I feel like really, I don't know, that's like grown in such a way, which we have grown in such a way. And I'm
Yeah.
really thankful to be here and thankful to our listeners and our Patreon supporters and sponsors and things like that. But what would you say to people who are blossoming, budding, yearning even? What would you say?
That yearning is never going to stop. So stop acting. So don't consider every single thing as urgent as you think it will be. This craft and this practice, like I said before, is always evolving and growing. You're never going to reach a finish line. And if you think you have, you're wrong. If you think, in my opinion, well, let me rephrase. If you actually reach a finish line in your craft, why do you continue practicing? I think that's one of those things that people believe, oh, once I get this tool, once I get this book, once I finish this initiatory practice and get to the umpteenth level pinnacle belt, like that's the thing that is going to be your finish line. There is no finish line. There are a lot of practitioners in our community. I won't name any names, but I have heard, and I don't know what that means. I think I don't want to get in trouble here. What it means to them is not what I'm critiquing here whatsoever, but I have seen practitioners who seem to hop from tradition to tradition to collect badges of initiation, to collect badges of degrees. We see this in ceremonial magic. We see this in covens. We see this in closed and different types of traditions. I don't give a lot of credence to degrees that much, because I feel like many of these hierarchies that were created in the first place in that way, I think there's absolutely validity there, and I'm not taking that away whatsoever. But I think some people are just degree chasers because it adds another di which diploma they can add to their
To
I
their
don't
wall of
their
degrees.
wall of degrees.
You know, when you're like in a telemedicine interview and you can see like the Harvard degree that's like on the
Yes.
wall behind somebody, yeah, it's very that. I
It
studied
is.
at the black under mountain school of the dragon master
Yeah.
of the feral vaginal coven.
Absolutely, obviously. So I would just say, like, your practice is yours. Educate yourself on everything you possibly can, and just recognize that, like I said, there's no end goal here. So let that evolve. Let new experiences inspire you. And your craft doesn't need to look like someone else's. I think that's one of the biggest things. Many of us are bouncing ideas off of each other, and sometimes people get really fucking poignant about what they absolutely believe needs to be necessary. If you're not casting a circle, you are calling in demons. You have no idea what could come to your spell. And I'm just kind of
She's
like,
dark
she's
sided.
dark-sided. And I that's one of those things that people miss. And stay away from Facebook groups. That's it. Stay away from the witch Facebook groups.
That's actually my only advice.
As a former moderator for one of those groups, I have I ever told you that? I was a former
Yeah,
moderator.
you did.
I
Yeah.
know.
I can't.
I can't.
I
I
can't.
can't.
I because I have also been in them too, thinking like I'm gonna build local community, but I was like, it was bad. I don't have any advice. Because if you want me to tell you what I think,
Take your
that's why I
class.
have. Yeah, that's why
Take
I
my
have
classes.
class. I have classes and consultations. And that's not even me trying to be like, ooh, just buy my thing. That's I'm like I'm half joking and I'm half not, but like also literally like. That's kind of going into what Marshall is saying is like it doesn't have to look like anyone's practice. And if you want me to inject my opinion in there, I mean, I definitely give it for free everywhere, all over the online. So don't you worry. It's certainly there. But like, I truly mean, like, if in a, this go, this doesn't just go for me. This goes for like other people as well. Like, I think there's an importance to, if you want information, go seek it. Go seek it from others if you feel like that's like what you want. And certainly hit me up. I'm not saying like to talk to me, you need to have a paywall. That's not what I mean. I just mean that take your time, mess up, like I always say, fuck up your life once or twice and put it back together. If I really have to be honest, don't rush into a witchcraft business. Just
Oh God,
do it.
the
And
business.
coming from me, girl, coming from me, I'm gonna let
The
you all
new
in on
practitioner to business owning pipeline
pipeline
is like 3 months.
within 6 months. Absolutely, mama. Just
If you're learning tarot, you should not be selling readings.
right, or at least doing it for like very little money,
Yeah.
or donations. You know what I mean? And that's not even me trying to gatekeep. I'm just like, what is the rush? Is your spirit relationships, and honestly, if your spirit relationships are all about how you can get money, I mean, go for it. Whatever. That's totally fine. I understand that.
Mama
But
Fortuna.
right, exactly. But also at the same time,
Yeah.
doing a business is going to change your practice in some ways so much better.
Yeah.
Because you have to hold yourself accountable, but like not everybody has that strong suit. So like, yeah, that's my advice. Don't if you want my advice, you can get a consultation or a class. But also take your time, and thirdly and foremostly, like if you think that you need to run into a witchcraft business, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying evaluate why and what your practice looks like, and also like what does your experience look like. And I know that like witchcraft isn't a quantifiable thing, but also like when you do start taking clients on, it's like you are going to have an arsenal of like magic that you know works, because when people are paying you and the thing doesn't work, it's kind of like it can appear scammy. So just say
Scammy and scummy.
scammy and scummy,
Yeah.
scummy. And I love a little bit of scum.
Do you have any magical goals for the new year? 2024.
I do, but none that I can publicly say.
Okay.
But in terms of like things that I hope to see from the podcast, from Baynex Bramble, I hope to do more classes. I said that last year, and I did do more classes last year.
Yes.
I hope to,
Congratulations.
thank you. I hope to, in a way, which maybe if you're reading between the lines, you can
Yeah.
see how that might appear,
Yeah.
in the form.
Yeah.
I hope to impart in the year 2024, or perhaps 2025, the cosmological framework
Yeah.
in which I operate my
Yes.
witchcraft in,
Yes.
perhaps sandwiched in between some cardstock.
Ah, yes. Yes. I love
I
this.
hope. Thank you.
I'll buy it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What about you?
I hope to publish my second book.
Yeah.
That's honestly, so I've been writing another book since my book Cutting Words came out in March of 2023. It's a I don't want to give too much away, but it will be part of the Cutting Words collection. There, I will say,
Collection.
Collection, there is going to be a Cutting Words collection. So that's some
She's got plans.
she's got plans. There is a web that is being woven and untangled here, which is very, very interesting, the way it's being revealed to me over time. And I also am writing a third book, which is separate from the Cunning Words collection. And I won't say anything more except for my goal is to find a traditional publisher, and have it traditionally published versus self-publishing that one specific. So, I'm kind of excited because that's going to be a whole new journey for me. And the fact that this past year my goal was to publish my first book ever, I did it. I still sometimes have a hard time believing it, because I never thought that was something that I could do. And I think that there are a lot of people in my life who would agree with that statement. And I'm not sure if that's a great thing, but the fact that they're so proud considering they thought it would never happen still makes me feel good. But yeah, that's my goal. Focusing on my literary not attributes, aspirations.
Aspirations. There we go.
Yes.
I also was like, I know the word.
You've been listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I am Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light. You can find me on TikTok, on Threads, and on Instagram at Witch of Southern Light. Please buy my book. The hardcover and color copy and black and white copy are all available on the link trees in my bio. They're sold on Amazon. There's also a Kindle version. If you want to know more about my personal practice, about my cosmology, about the magic that is possible through the power of story and narrative, please check out Cunning Words, a grimoire of tales and magic. I self-published it. I did all the art. I designed the cover. My cover was recently stolen by Temu, and I had to report. I know. Did you hear about that? It was
No.
stolen. Not the whole book, just the cover for like wall art on like some aluminum wall hanging that apparently 19 people have already purchased. And I'm like, oh,
That
thank you.
means you've made it.
I've made it when Temu is stealing from me. Next thing you know, it'll be on Shein. Please check out the link tree in all of my bios. There is lots of free resources there, lots of great videos, a whole list of herbal correspondences, and all of my shops where you can find my art, my books, my wears and tears. Please check that out.
And I'm Austin Bain X Bramble on Instagram. You can find me in all my womanly wares on BainXBramble.com. Of course, I am also doing some in-person classes with Dysfunctional Grace at their new location in Ybor City. If you are interested, I have some perfume classes that are going on right now. I am also doing both Botanica Obscura as well as the Salem Witchcraft and Folklore Festival's Spring Agora, which is online. Both in March, my first class for Botanica Obscura will be on the witchcraft of Venus, and my other one for Salem Witchcraft and Folklore Festival will be the Ghost in the Shell, Magic Machines, and Post-Human Witchcraft. And you can also I will have a limited release of magics that I will be putting out, Materia Magica, and that comes out sometime after Epiphany. So I hope that you enjoy that. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
At this point in time, we would love to thank our Tier 3 supporters from our Patreon by name: Jason, Nico, Colby, Callie, Johnny, Jameson, Jennifer, Cindy, the Witch of Patapsco Forest, John, Giles, Jennifer, Shauna, the Modern Babylon, V, Lisa, Ariella, Keith, Jens, Addity, Tracy, Timothy, Witch Rafa, the Lady Ghost, Seashaw, and of course, Key Archambault. Thank you so much for your support. I truly can't tell you what it means to us to have you be part of the making of our show.